I do have one question. Our first question today is from Julie Tegney.
Hi. I just had a very simple question. What was the name of the pamphlet that you said would be good literature to hand out?
That's called Reducing Cancer Risk After Transplantation. It was published recently in 2006 by the National Kidney Foundation based on the research that Dr. Whittle talked about. And single copies are free for calling 800-622-9010. All the speakers should have received them in your packet. Some of you haven't received your packets yet, so they should be coming. And if you wanted bulk copies for your, you know, many transplant centers order bulk copies, there is a slight charge for that, for the bulk copies, but we think it's well worth it.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Our next question is from Mary McKinney.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'd like to ask the doctor and the social worker, not because I'd like to plan a group to bring some of these great programs to patients that here at our hospital. How do patients receive information, over time? I know some patients are, kind of understand it quickly, but others may be more frightened. How do you temper it to fit the person that you're talking with?
Dr. Whittle, did you want to respond? Or?
Well, I'm not sure if I completely understand the question.
Yeah, what I would like to say is that some patients can take that information very easily, and how do you temper it to each individual that you're doing it in a group, say?
Yeah, I think the important thing is to put it into context.
Okay.
The increased risk that you get for cancer related to the immunosuppression that you get following transplantation is really small in comparison to the risk that you have in terms of cardiovascular.
Oh, okay.
Renal failure itself markedly increases the risk, cardiovascular risk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that risk to your life is much greater than is the risk of cancer risk following transplantation. Now, the other thing that's important to know is once you get a transplant, your cardiovascular risk itself will decrease, okay?
Right.
And this is partially but not completely outweighed by the increased risk that you have for cancer. And so overall survival in most patients is better with a transplant, even though there's somewhat of an increased risk of specific types of tumors. For most of the types of tumors, the most common tumors or cancers that you get, the increased risk is fairly small. Okay?
That's a good way of presenting it. Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah, you've got to keep it in context.
Absolutely.
It's important for a patient to understand that there's an increased risk, but that increased risk pales in comparison to the risk that you got from cardiovascular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
And I think then also the follow-up, which is just like when you're working with disaster preparedness, is to be able to say, and what is your plan to manage it so that you really do have a sense of empowerment against it?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Patty Merritt.
Hello. I know Dr. Whittle mentioned that patients on Rapamune from the beginning have less cancer, and there was a lot of success with Kaposi's sarcoma. I was wondering if there's been enough information collected on people that start to develop cancers, switch over to Rapamune. I know it's promising, but are there studies with that if it is actually decreasing cancer?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say there is some data, and it's not completely convincing, but it's fairly strong to suggest that if you start off with sarcoma early following transplant, that your risk is decreased. Now, the decrease in risk is not tremendous, but it is a decrease in the risk. What's known about switching to sarcoma, the best data is in Kaposi's sarcoma patients. And I tell you, there's about 40 patients in the literature right now who have had Kaposi's sarcoma. Every single patient that had Kaposi's just in their skin, not in their GI tract, every one of them has had complete resolution of their Kaposi's. Now, there are, I think, about two or three patients in the literature that have had Kaposi's in the GI tract, and they've also had it disappear. The reason that's important is that GI tract involvement is a little bit more difficult to treat and has a worse prognosis. So that particular cancer, I think the data is pretty convincing. Now, in terms of, there are some anecdotal reports. There is one report in the literature, for example, of a patient that had hepatocellular carcinoma with lung metastases, and actually with stopping all the other immunosuppression and putting the patient on sirolimus, the lung metastases completely disappeared. Now, that's a pretty striking example, but those are the types of data that are out there. People are also always asking now, and a lot of physicians empirically will switch patients to sirolimus. One of the standard approaches to treat a cancer after a transplant is to reduce the immunosuppression. If you just take a patient, for example, and switch cyclosporin for sirolimus or rapamycin, or if you switch their Prograf to rapamycin or sirolimus, that reduces their immunosuppression in itself.
Okay.
So one of the things that's hard to sort out is whether it's just reducing the immunosuppression or whether it's a direct effect of the rapamycin itself. But I think it's fair to say that there's a substantial amount of data and a lot of interest just because of the basic science that's out there.
Well, it also reminds me of the studies that they're doing in polycystic kidney disease, where the native kidneys are having a shrinking effect with rapamycin, I guess, is a side effect.
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned to you, mTOR signaling pathway is a very important growth pathway for cells. There are a lot of growth factors that drive that pathway. And sirolimus or rapamycin inhibits that pathway very profoundly. And when you know that 70% of all human cancers have defects in that pathway and a loss of regulation, it's not hard to conceive that it may have it may be useful in a number of cancers. It's impossible right now to predict how an individual cancer would respond, and so a lot of people just empirically do this and try to see if the patient gets better. You know, the biggest advantage of this, you know, actually say, for example, temsirolimus as a chemotherapeutic agent for renal cell cancer, it doesn't have the toxicities that most chemotherapy agents have, or the toxicity with it is not nearly as great. So I think it's just the first in a class of agents that are going to come out that will actually have effects. If you inhibit growth or inhibit proliferation, you will suppress rejection. And if you get the right growth inhibitor, you may suppress cancer too. So.
Thank you. I have no further questions at this time. As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1.
Kathy, I wonder if something should be said a little bit about maintenance of information. So one piece I meant to include was the survey seemed to really ask, the patients really asked for reminder cards and things that would keep them mindful. So if the social workers there today are thinking of running these beautiful lobby groups or evening programs, the patients are saying, that's probably not enough. I want to remember. Help me remember. And so there are ways to just set up email systems out to patients and reminder cards and having, you know, buttons printed that the transplant team wears, you know, tell me 3 things you need to know about screening for cancer. So the mindfulness part of wellness and what we can do for patients is also very important, and I think they're asking for that.
Thank you for that. I do have a couple of other questions.
Okay.
Our next question is from Andrea Bedrain.
Hi, I realize our teleconference is on cancer risk after transplantation, but cardiovascular disease as an increased risk factor with renal disease has been mentioned a couple of times. And so my question is, tell us a little bit about that. One statement was made that the risk of cardiovascular disease increases with renal failure. However, it decreases once the patient gets a transplant. Can you talk a little about that, please?
Dr. Wood?
Yes. You know, when one looks at cardiovascular risk factors and the relative strength, for example, you know, the American Heart, there have been a number of studies, and some of them sponsored by American Heart Association, that show, you know, if you look at cholesterol, hypertension, triglycerides, smoking, diabetes, and weight, that all of those confer a certain risk. If you look at how much of a risk they confer, you know, cholesterol is less important, much less important than smoking or diabetes. Diabetes and smoking are several fold greater in terms of their effects and the risk that they confer. When you look at the development of renal failure, okay, and being on dialysis to treat it, that risk is more closer to the magnitude of smoking and diabetes than is cholesterol. And when you translate that into the relative frequency with which patients suffer cardiovascular events, then it's clear that just the development of renal failure itself confers a much greater risk than is the risk of cancer. Okay? So that's where that data comes from. Now, if you look at having renal failure, if you look at dialysis only replaces maybe 15 to 20% of renal function, okay, if you've got good and effective dialysis. A transplant will replace, for example, up to 50%, maybe 60% of function. And it's clear now, and there's good data to show, that the better dialysis is, the more effective dialysis is, or the better the function of your kidney graft is, the less your cardiovascular risk is. And so does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Our next question today is from Marilyn Sharon.
Hello.
Hello.
I had a question which you may actually sort of answered already. On the points on page 9, I wondered if there had been any materials developed, like contracts that patients might make, or you mentioned the buttons that some people may have. I wondered, are there printouts about each of those points?
Not yet, probably, right, Kathy?
Right.
But I think the listserv that's set up is a wonderful place to share those points, and I've found that as we start wellness programming, patients also come up with wonderful ways when they're in a group setting to help keep each other mindful in those areas. So I bet if you just ran one evening program, it would start to fill in all of those ways that they themselves and others could stay involved in keeping themselves well.
One thing we do have on puzzlemaker.com, my colleagues work with me, and we developed a puzzle, which is just kind of a fun thing that reminds patients about cancer risks and how to reduce them. There's a contract with puzzlemaker.com. You can't send it out to more than 50 people, you know, at a time. But I could share it, like, with the listserv, and then you could, in small, you know, in groups less than 50, share it with patients, and they may have fun with it. And it's clearly written on it that it is from puzzlemaker.com.
Are you going to talk a little bit about getting onto the listserv, Kathy, for everybody?
If you have been signed up for this session, you should be on our listserv. If you're not, and if you have any questions about anything related to this call or how to get your CEU credit if you're a social worker, you can call me at 800-622-9010, extension 144. I want to thank you all for joining us, and a tremendous thanks to our panelists who have just given freely of their time and their energy and knowledge to us. And I hope you have a wonderful day.